You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Here comes the rush. There goes the ball. It's a touchdown. Luke Tasker. Kick from the 46 for Castile. He is good. Play clock comes down, though. And White has it blocked. Could be a scoop and score. Should be a scoop and score. Will be a scoop and score for Jeff Hughes.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
All right, Mike. We're sitting here again talking about another loss. Unfortunately, this time, Tie Cats. It was a hard-fought 31-28 defeat at the hands of the still undefeated Edmonton Eskimos. The loss by the Tie Cats drops them to a dismal 0-4 in the season, their first 0-4 start since 2007. But I don't think that we're going to be as down on the team this week as we were in previous weeks, because personally, I think that this was a much better performance from the Tie Cats, and I think every unit, both offense, defense, and special teams, all showed something in this. But the Tie Cats surrendered a 13-point lead at home and were outscored 18-3 in the final quarter. So the Tie Cats should have put the Esks away, and they didn't, and that's why they're sitting here at 0-4. But there are some positives to take from this game, no?
Absolutely. There are a ton of positives. I mean, the offensive line played pretty well. Caleros had his best game, even though he had his blunders, the two interceptions, and not a great completion percentage. That's 61%. The defense played better. Everything was better. Everything is improving game by game, and that leads me to have some optimism about this team, even though two next games are going to be tough, but I don't know if we can keep improving. Maybe we'll get one win out of that. Hopefully two, because I want to be 2-4 when this Western swing's all done, but we shall see.
Yeah, that might be wishful thinking on your part, but I do enjoy coming on the show and being optimistic about the team for once. It's been a while since you and I have been able to sit here and really talk about how we're not so down on the squad. I think it was probably the late season Ottawa game last year where we really were like, no, maybe these guys can piece it together. And it feels like after what we saw on Thursday that maybe this team isn't as terrible as we suspect. Maybe they're still not good enough, obviously, because they're 0-4. But maybe there's actually some pieces here that the team can work with. So offensively, you brought up the offensive line. If you'd like to start there, you can. If you'd like to start somewhere else, feel free to do that. But offensively, what were some of your takeaways from this game?
Well, I'll start with the offensive line. They did, I thought that Zach had a pocket to throw in. He had time back there, and, the numbers show it. Like you mentioned earlier, we had a lead through pretty much the whole game until about a minute and whatever left on the – or 30 seconds or whatever it was – that last-minute drive. So I thought Caleros played pretty well. That one pick was really bad. It was in the second half, I believe. And
yeah,
he threw it into the double coverage.
Tasker, right? Is that the one
yeah.
You're talking about? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I could see where he thought, because when he made that break to the corner, it looked like he was going to be open, but then it just it closed down pretty quickly, and Zach underthrew the ball. And, that really hurt the team. Zach, I think he's getting better, but he just hasn't looked the same. Even with a shabby offensive line, you can't blame it all on the O-line, and he hasn't been the Zach we've known since he's been a Ticat.
No, does it feel to you like it does to me that he's maybe forcing things a bit?
Yes, it totally. Like, there's been some situations where it's been second and short, second and medium, and he's throwing the ball way downfield. I think he should just take what's in front of him, take what the defense gives him, and move the sticks. He doesn't have to bomb it out on every second down.
Yeah, it feels to me like he thinks, and again, I'm not in his head, so I don't know, but it feels like he thinks that he has to do more because the talent around him is not as good as it was a couple of years ago. And that's not, I'm not trying to knock any of the guys on the team now. I think everyone would look at this team and go, it's not as talented as it was 2 or 3 years ago. But I feel like with a lot of areas on this team, this game showed progression. And I think you're right. I think Caleros played really well in this game, but still showed those things that frustrate you about him. And I think that's kind of just the overall narrative from this game as a whole. It's like you saw things and were like, oh my God, this was so great. And then, but at the same time, oh, well, like personally for me, when the Ticats kicked that field goal late in the fourth quarter to take a 5-point lead, I'm sitting there in the stands going, I think Edmonton's going to drive down here and score a touchdown to win the game. And maybe that's just me being cynical. Maybe that's me being negative, but that's what it felt like. And then they went down and did it with relative ease. Like, I didn't even get mad because it felt like an inevitability.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the my issue with this team this year is that if something bad's going to happen, it's going to happen. Like, if you feel it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
If there's an inevitability to this team when it comes to bad things happening. And that was just another example of it on Thursday.
Absolutely, and but more positive things. I thought that Scheuermann had a really good game. He had 10 carries for 68 yards. You can figure out the average on your own, people. I mean, it's not that hard. A long of 40 yards. I like this kid. I really do. I think he's a pretty good blocker in the backfield from what I've seen, and he has some speed. He can turn a 5-yard run into a 40-yard run, and that's been really nice to see.
And again, the narrative and the definite, like, what we're looking at in this game is he showed progression from his first start to his second start to his, like, he's gotten better every time he's been in there. And we talked about it last week. I think we've seen the last of CJ Gable in a Ticats uniform, and I think Scheuermann again this week played really well. And I think once again, C.J. Gable is probably not going to see the field for this team, barring an injury. But a big question I have for you is, late in the game, I touched on the field goal. What did you think of the 2nd and 4 run call? Should they have gone to the air? What are your thoughts there?
I like the call. I think that the defense was, you know, if you look at the history of this team, obviously they don't run the ball that much. I thought it probably could have maybe caught them off guard. And, you know, it didn't. It didn't work. But I like the call.
Okay. I was less bullish on it just because they had done so well being aggressive, and it felt almost like they were afraid to lose. And maybe that's the wrong thing to think, but you know what? Maybe you're right. Maybe it was one of those things where we think we're going to take the defense off guard. And you know what? The defense gets paid to make plays, and the defense of Edmonton is really good, and they made a great play. But it would have been nice to see them pick up a first down in any manner, because that probably would have sealed the game.
Yeah, you know, a couple more downs. Riley doesn't have as much time to, you know, drive down the field. So, yeah, I was pretty scared once they didn't make that first down. And then, you know, we all know what happened. But you take a look at the receiving core, you know, Claros really spread the ball around. There, none of the numbers really stand out, per se. Jasper Collins led the team with 58 yards. But you had Collins, Saunders, Mike Jones, Scheuermann, Tasker, Brian Timms, all catching at least one ball. So, and that's another thing about Scheuermann. You know, C.J. Gable was good out of the backfield catching the ball, but, you know, Scheuermann had 2 catches for 36 yards. That's it's a pretty darn good average. So he's a double threat. And I'm starting to really like this kid. So you look at Jasper Collins and Jalen Saunders again, and they're contributing to this team. 4 catches each, 53 yards for Saunders, 58 for Collins. I'm starting to really like these two kids as well.
You know who I'm really high on right now is Mike Jones.
Mm-hmm.
That kid he's the second leading receiver on the team this year, and raise your hand if you would have had that picked after 4 games. He's just really playing well in his second year, and I think Spencer Watt last year, they're basically, now Jones moves around a lot more. I've seen him in the slot. I've seen him on the short side. So they are getting him involved more, but he basically replaced Spencer Watt, who I think had around 250 receiving yards last year. And that was I think Watt played all 18 games. I could be wrong. Maybe he missed a couple, but he played a vast majority of the games. In 4 games, Mike Jones already has 184 yards receiving. And that's not easy to do as the sort of the fifth option on this team. So when I keep seeing him catching passes, make plays, like he had five targets in this game and caught all five passes. He also had the 2-point convert catch. Like he has really, really stepped up this year. And there's a lot of hype about him because of his speed coming out of college in the draft last year. He's really sort of taken that leap in his second year, and it's been really, really nice to see.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with him as well. And it shows that the coaching staff is really high on this kid, because like you said, they're switching him around, they're putting him in the slot at times, and he's been getting a lot, quite a few targets. So I think there's a lot of potential here for Mike Jones as we go through the season and as the years go on, because the more experience this kid gets, the better he's going to get. And I think there's a lot of potential there. It's pretty exciting to see a kid like that come in.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me to see him finish the year, if he stays healthy, of course, with like 600-700 yards receiving and a couple of touchdowns. And for your fifth option, for your guy who mostly plays on the wide side, that's gravy, man. Like you're not supposed to get those types of yards out of it. You remember when we had Sam Giguere and everyone said that he was a disappointment? He was putting up 500 mm-hmm. yards in that wide side spot, which is incredible for that position. And Jones can probably eclipse that this year, and that's a big boon to this offense, especially when in a year's time, Andy Fantuz will likely be healthy and back. Terrence Tolliver will likely be healthy and back. Luke Tasker will still be around. We've seen the emergence of Jalen Saunders. You mentioned Jasper Collins has played well. Like, these might not be household names, and they're not going to be guys that would be number one receivers, but not everyone's meant to be Terrence Tolliver. Not everyone's meant to be a Darius Bowman or Eric Rogers when he was playing with the Calgary Stampeders. Like, not everyone could be SJ Green. Sometimes you need your Kerry Watkins. You need your Jamel Richardsons, too. Like, there needs to be a bunch of talent in the receiving corps, and I think the Ticats have a lot. And we really haven't even talked about Brian Timms, because he's been kind of a disappointment this year. He only had one catch for 16 yards, and, again, he's a guy who, at the end of last year, we saw him play really, really well. Hasn't really been a factor so far this season, but there's a lot of talent, a lot of unknown talent in this receiving corps, and I think it bodes well for the team in the future.
Yeah, it is a little bit disappointing that Timms hasn't been putting up the numbers, because I figured that he would be, you know, one of the 1, 2, 3 targets for Kolaros, but that might not be his fault. He's just not maybe getting targeted as much as we expected. So I think he's a talented dude, and once he breaks out, I think we'll have another good receiver on our hands.
For sure, for sure. Anything else on the offensive side of the ball that you'd like to bring up before we move on to the defense?
Not really. Just the fact that I get confused seeing Jalen Saunders out there. I always think he's Speedy B. Do you have that same problem?
I won't say I have the same problem, but they do look awfully similar in size, and they're both obviously very fast. So I can't say that I have the same issue, but I understand why you could.
Yeah, they do look quite similar in uniform, and they have a close number as well. But other than that, I think we've covered pretty much everything on the offensive side of the ball.
All right, so let's go defense. I'm going to start off a little bit negative here. I do have a lot of positives to bring up, don't get me wrong. But to me, this game, the outcome of it kind of hinged on the outcome of two series that really stand out to me as to why the Ticats lost this game. It was two touchdown drives that they gave up, both in the final 3 minutes of the first half and the final 3 minutes of the second half. If the defense gets a stop on either one of those drives, the Ticats win this game. That's obvious for the one that occurred in the fourth quarter. But if they would have held Edmonton to a field goal instead of allowing a touchdown, that 5-point lead that they have is a 9-point lead going, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah.
They didn't get the stop when they needed to. And we mentioned they kicked the field goal, 2 minutes left, up by five. Kind of felt like an inevitability S would score, but if they would have been able to get a stop on just one of those two drives, this team would have won the game. And the reason it bugs me so much is because outside of those two drives, I thought the defense played really well in this game.
I thought so too. I thought they were really flying around there, hitting hard. I mean, Riley was crushed at least three times in this game, especially the one by the newcomer. What was his name here?
Davin Coleman. Absolutely.
There you go.
The tar out of Mike Riley in this game. He had three or four hits on Riley that were vicious, and they got the crowd pumped, and they were massive hits. And Teddy Laurent, who we're gonna I'm not gonna talk about him here because he's gonna show up a little bit later in the segment. He's getting a distinction this week, so we're gonna save it for that. But they really beat up Mike Riley in this game. They pressured it. He had 11 pressures on 37 dropbacks. They sacked him three times, and they held Edmonton to just 13 points through three quarters. Like, this is – the defense played well, just not well enough in those key situations that they have to. And once again, the team unfortunately loses. But, there are positives to take from it. And we talked about the defensive line. What was it, last week, the week before? It might have even been last week. I think you brought them up and said, like, they haven't really performed. And then look what happened in this game. They were monsters out there.
Yeah, and – a guy that's really been impressing me this year has been Capocotti. It seems like every time he gets in the game, he makes a play. He's had at least two sacks this season. I know he had one, I think, in this game. So a rotation guy that really takes advantage of his opportunities when he gets in the game.
He really feels comfortable in this defense this year. He came over in a trade last year, so obviously he wasn't going to light the world on fire. But he didn't look great in Saskatchewan after signing there as a free agent. He had a great couple of seasons in Ottawa that really made him a household name. It looks like he's getting back to that Ottawa Capocotti that we saw for those 2 years. And I've also been really impressed by him. And it's nice to be impressed by the Canadian players. The better Canadians you have, the better your team will be. And again, we're seeing progression from players, and that's why we're – people are going to think we're crazy when they listen to the show and go, why are you so high on this team? They're 0-4. But we're seeing improvement, and I think that's a big – Capocotti's a major example of that.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that Lynn injury, when Lynn went down in the secondary, I think that hurt this team because they were performing at a – the secondary was performing at a pretty high level. And after that, it kind of dropped off. Did you see the same thing?
Yep, absolutely. And the big thing about that, too, is on that play, Lynn gets hurt. We later find out that he has broken his femur, which is like the most difficult bone in the body to break. So it was clearly a very – you even – in instance, when he went down, the play was dead. Odell Willis was running on the field calling for the trainers to come over. It was – so clearly he was in pain, probably screaming on the field. And obviously that made a major difference. I thought the secondary played well in this game for the most part. Brandon Zylstra did go over 100 yards. And on that play where Lynn gets hurt, it was another example of this team, this defense, having a chance to get the offense off the field. And what was it? It was a second and 22, and the S picked up a first down. And I think we kind of ignore that because of the injury that took place, and we're all concerned, and rightly so. And I think I can speak for you in saying I hope Keon Lynn makes a speedy and full recovery, and I want to see him back on the field because I was impressed by him these last two games. He played, he filled in for Will Hill at the Sam linebacker position a week ago. I thought he played really well at the boundary corner. I thought they had a player in this kid, and to see him go down was really sad. But I have to bring up that it occurred on a play where the Ticats once again gave up a huge second down conversion. And again, another reason why this team is 0-4.
This issue has to be addressed. It can't be happening game after game after game. When you put the opposition in a second and 20 plus, it should be a guarantee that it's going to be third down and they're going to be punting the ball. But it seems like almost every time that they're in second and long, this team gives up the first down, and I don't know what the issue is.
I can't make hide nor hair of it either. I have no idea how this keeps happening, but it does, and it's an issue, and it has to, like you said, it has to be fixed. Because again, this is a major reason why this team is winless, because they cannot get the opposing offenses off the field when they get the. I've lost count of how many times this year we have seen second and 10 plus, and this was second and 22, and we see a first down, and that kills spirits, that kills momentum. That's a backbreaker when you're in the stands. Like, you're like, this was going to be a down moment anyway because of the injury. But if that doesn't occur and we're like, holy crap, they picked up a second and 22, if we're focusing on that, the people in the stands are going to get restless.
Yeah, it's just all around downer for the team, the stadium, the fans, everybody. It's like I said, it needs to be addressed, and it needs to be fixed immediately, because we're going to be giving up those second and longs on a consistent basis. This team is going to be in a lot of trouble. Not that it's not already.
Very true. Very true. I just want to bring up one more thing. I thought Richard Leonard had another really good game. A couple of pass knockdowns, some great coverage. I'm really liking what I'm seeing out of this kid, and he's another example of we're seeing players start to play better. He had the touchdown on the blocked field goal in the first game, but I don't think he played particularly well in his first two games. But the last couple of weeks, he's really stepped it up, and I think he's earned himself a role in the secondary. Even when all the injured players come back, I could see him still starting out there. So it's another young player that maybe this season might be lost, but they have found a few young guys who I think can contribute to this team in the future, and Richard Leonard is one of those guys.
Yeah, and I thought Will Hill had a really good game too. I thought he was, making plays all over the field. He was a physical guy out there. He had 6 defensive tackles. He's just a guy that you can tell really loves playing football, and he's a damn good player.
I'm glad you brought him up because I did want to mention something. So he got a 15-yard unnecessary roughness penalty. I saw people on Twitter calling him an idiot, thinking he's a fool. Like, why is he doing this stuff? He's undisciplined. From where I sat, now you obviously watched the game on television, so you had a better vantage point than I did. From where I sat, it looked as if the Edmonton receiver caught the ball. He was down, but he popped up and was trying to run forward. And Will Hill, maybe didn't hear the whistle, maybe there wasn't a whistle, I don't recall, was saying, I'm not letting this guy go, and tried to make a play. Like, it's a somewhat defensible foul, I think, because of the circumstances on the field. What did you see there? Do you remember the play that I'm talking about?
I do remember, and yeah, I thought it wasn't the smartest play in the world, but I thought what you thought. It wasn't a malicious hit or anything like that. I think he was just trying to, finish his play, and it was a mistake on his part. But I wasn't overly angry about the play. I didn't think that he had any bad will trying to hurt the guy or anything. So yeah, it was a penalty, but I agree it was defensible, somewhat defensible.
Okay, so special teams. We got to talk about special teams because they were awesome. And I think we're going to start with more blocked kicks. This team is excelling at blocked kicks. They blocked an extra point, which was pretty cool. You don't see that very often. But the big one, obviously, was the blocked punt by Terrell Davis. That was scooped up and returned for a touchdown. That got everyone going. Man, special teams really, really came to play in this one.
Yeah, and they actually showed the special teams coordinator on TSN, and I was like, "Oh, that's what he looks like." But he's been doing a pretty good job. I mean, it seems like the special teams is back from a couple of years ago when Reinbold was running the show, and they were blocking punts and doing all sorts of good stuff. And I also thought that Brandon Banks, while his numbers weren't through the roof or anything, I could just see that he was, I don't know how to put this, there was more effort on his part, trying to find the holes, trying to make a big play. You could tell that he was just giving it all. So that was a good thing to see. And Saunders is a pretty good returner as well.
So, Mike, speaking of special teams, I think we've now reached the point where we no longer really have to talk about Sergio Castillo. Another perfect week for him. He goes 4 for 4 on field goals. He's now 9 for 9 on the season. Tim Hortons Field does not seem to be too tricky for him to handle. His punting has been magnificent. He was great punting the ball in this game. He had an average of 47.8 yards per punt and a long of 57. I think now's the time we can really kind of stop bringing him up and being surprised that he's playing well. Of course, now that I've said this, he's going to have a horrible game in Calgary this week. But I think as of right now, Castillo has far exceeded any expectations anyone had for him. And I kind of don't think we should be surprised anymore when he has a good game. He's proven he's a good kicker. And I think we can kind of just accept it and move on. What do you feel?
I feel the same way. Brett Maher came in last year and we were impressed by him. But Castillo's been better, bottom line, in the field goal department. And I'm not sure about the punting numbers, but I would bet that he's probably slightly better than Maher was last year. So yeah, I tweeted out during the game that I feel kind of silly that I was so worried about the kicking in the offseason, because this guy is the real deal. And we're through 4 games and he's showing that for sure.
There are some great kickers in this league who are not perfect on their field goal attempts. He's only kicked 9. We saw Justin Medlock just this week miss a 50-yard field goal. Justin Medlock never misses 50-yard field goals. Like, just for Justin Medlock, a 50-yard field goal is like kicking a 10-yarder, and he missed. So Castillo has been good. He has been. And there was all the talk last week, Swayze Waters was released. We even talked about it on the show, like, should the Ticats bring him in? And as much as I like guys like that, and I think it's nice to have a name at kicker, and you want to spend money and get a good kicker, and having Justin Medlock here would be great. Sergio Castillo has been perfect. Like, point blank. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not, that's not hyperbole. He's literally perfect on field goals. You can't ask for anything more.
No. We talked about it last week. Bringing in a guy like Waters would cost a pretty penny, and we just simply don't need to replace Castillo. He's the guy. He's the guy.
All right, so that's all the special teams talk we have. But before we finish this game, it's my turn this week to pick our glorious player of the week. I teased it a little earlier. It's Teddy Laurent. This guy absolutely ate the lunch of the interior of the Edmonton Eskimos line. Three sacks, an additional quarterback pressure. He was a beast, period.
Yep, and a forced fumble.
You're right, he did have a fourth. The Tigers didn't recover it, but it was a forced fumble, correct? I totally forgot about that. Like, so just what more can you ask for a guy who plays the nose tackle position on the defensive line? He's not a guy who's supposed to be getting three sacks in a game. We saw Charlton Hughes, defensive end, get three sacks for Calgary against the Rough Riders. For Ted Laurent to do this against a pretty darn good Edmonton offensive line speaks volumes. He was awesome. Not surprised that he's awesome. He's one of the best interior defensive linemen in the league. Probably definitely the best Canadian as far as I'm concerned. Top three in the whole league, regardless of passport. So I'm not shocked that he had a great game, but it was still, he was just all over the place. Every time someone was in Mike Riley's face putting him down, it was Teddy Laurent.
And I was kind of wondering, where's Big Teddy? Where's Big Teddy? And he certainly showed up this game. He was just a force all game long. You know, bothering Mike Riley quite a bit. So three sacks, a perfect player of the week pick by you.
So moving on to the news segment, we don't have any Ticats news to talk about. They didn't cut anyone. They didn't fire anyone. Much to, I think, everyone's chagrin, because they want everyone fired and cut because the team is 0-4. But there was no Ticats news to discuss whatsoever. I guess the biggest thing would have been the Keon Lynn injury, but we discussed that during the game. So we can move on to talking some CFL stuff. Not a ton of CFL news, but a big milestone did happen this past week in the CFL. Kevin Glenn became the seventh player in league history to pass for 50,000 yards. I don't think anyone who listens to the show will be surprised that I'm happy for Glenn. I've always been a Kevin Glenn fan, dating back to his time with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Before he ever came to Hamilton, I always liked Kevin Glenn. So to see him surpass 50,000 yards, to join that elite group of CFL quarterbacks who have done that, I say kudos to him. But now the question has sort of become, is he a Hall of Famer? Because every other player that has passed for 50,000 or more yards that's eligible for the Hall of Fame is in. And the other two, I think, are Ricky Ray and Henry Burris, who everyone seems to think are shoo-ins for the Hall of Fame. So now Glenn joins that group, and it makes you wonder, is he a Hall of Famer? So, Mike, what do you think? Do you think Kevin Glenn deserves to be enshrined in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame?
That's a really tough question. You know, the Hall of Fame should be reserved for the very best of the best. And I'm not sure Glenn was ever, you know, a top three quarterback in this league. Now, I'm sure he's had seasons where he was. The Bomber season in 07 comes to mind, where he broke his arm. In the Eastern Final, maybe one of the years in Calgary, he was really effective, really good player. I just don't know if he is or if he isn't. I think he will be put in the Hall of Fame eventually, but I'm not sure if he's a Hall of Fame player.
Do you think if he had a ring, if say he doesn't break his arm against the Argos in the East Final and the Bombers go on to win that Grey Cup, again, this is all speculative, of course. Do you think the 50,000 yards, he probably stays in Winnipeg for much longer, doesn't jump from, because it wasn't until really after he left Winnipeg that he kind of jumped from team to team to team. Like, he went from Winnipeg to Hamilton, then Hamilton to Calgary, then Calgary to BC, then BC to Ottawa. Oh, no, Calgary to Ottawa, Ottawa to BC, BC to Saskatchewan, Saskatchewan to Montreal, Montreal to Winnipeg, Winnipeg back to Saskatchewan. So it's really been these last few years where he's really sort of been like the journeyman. But he was in Saskatchewan for a few years. Then he went to Winnipeg and spent a few years there. Like, it's only been in the past like 5-6 years that he's really started to bounce around. So do you think if he would have a Grey Cup ring, or say he wins a Grey Cup ring in the future, I don't think that's going to happen with Saskatchewan this year or any years down the line. I think they're still a few years away from competing, and Glenn is obviously getting up there. Do you think that would change the story? Do you think, okay, he's got the numbers, now he's got the ring, it's a guarantee?
I think it does change it. Now, we all know that football is a team sport, and, you know, maybe too much credit goes to the quarterbacks when they're on a winning team, such as Levi Mitchell. You know, TSN constantly talks about his record, but if he wasn't on a good team, I don't, you know, that doesn't happen, right? So, but if he did win that cup in 07, or if he won a cup before he retired, I think it would add to his resume, and I think it puts him over the top. You know, just having that ring puts him over the top. I think that he's a Hall of Fame player then.
Because if you look at his numbers and his career, it does kind of mimic a few of the great Hall of Fame players. It mimics someone like, say, a Damon Allen, who, because some people will say, and it was a big conversation on Twitter earlier today as we record on Monday about whether Glenn Izzo is a Hall of Famer, and people brought up, well, he's sort of, the detractors like, well, he's only putting up these numbers because he's lasted so long. But isn't lasting that long also a sign of excellence? You don't have a 17-year career, start 195 games and counting. He's going to get over 200 games started this year. That doesn't happen if you're a mediocre player. Like, he's maybe he never was one of the top three quarterbacks in the league, although I would argue when he was the East MOP in 07, I would argue the 2010 season with the Hamilton Tigercats, where he broke a slew of the team's passing records, records that were held by Danny McManus, who is in the Hall of Fame. I think you sort of see some parallels there. I think Danny McManus is also a great comparison. Like, aside from McManus's stint in Hamilton, kind of jumped around Winnipeg and BC and Edmonton, and he was a backup for some of those times. Then he was like the Grey Cup he won with the BC Lions in 1994. He was a backup that year to Ken Austin and only got in the starting lineup because Austin got hurt, guided them to that thrilling West Final win in Calgary in the snow that I think we all remember, where he threw the winning touchdown pass to Darren Flutie, and then they went on to beat the Stallions in the Grey Cup. And then goes on to Edmonton, and he's a starting quarterback in that Grey Cup that was played here in Hamilton. And then he finally comes to Hamilton and is sort of cemented as the guy. And then that's sort of what the first time he really became the man. So it's and Matt Dunnigan, another instance, great player, bounced around from team to team. Tracy Hamm bounced around from team to team. Like, the CFL, it's kind of, you can't really look at a guy and say, well, he played for 3, 5, 7 teams, therefore he can't be that good. Because do you remember like the mid-90s when it was just like the quarterback carousel? Everyone was moving everywhere.
Do you think that Glenn's been on championship caliber teams? Do you think that he's been a starter on championship caliber teams?
I would say probably the only two times that he really legitimately were on teams that could have won titles were the Winnipeg team that got to the Grey Cup, and those 2 years he was in Calgary. I don't think, looking back, I don't think the Hamilton teams that he was on were really championship caliber. I think we as fans kind of overrated them. Obviously, he did take them to an East Final 1 year, and they lost in Winnipeg. I don't think the Montreal teams he was on or the Saskatchewan teams he's been on recently, I don't think anyone would say that they were Grey Cup contenders. But I think those Winnipeg teams were pretty good, especially the last one, that 07 team he was on. And he got to the Grey Cup with Calgary, and then I believe they lost the West Final the following year. So those two teams, that may be it. Maybe 3 years out of his entire career where you could legitimately say the team around him was good enough to propel him to a championship. But I think you could say this, like, look at Henry Burris. Henry Burris has 2 Grey Cup wins as a starter, and he spent all those years in Calgary, and it wasn't until Huffnagel showed up that he finally got over the hump, and then even then couldn't do it again. As good as those teams, like, Glenn was traded for Burris, so Glenn takes Burris's team, and Burris had underperformed. I believe they got beat in the West semifinal the year before Burris was traded to Hamilton. Glenn takes that team to the Grey Cup, so there's a case to be made that Kevin Glenn hasn't played with the caliber of players that would elevate him. Like you mentioned with Bo Levi Mitchell, he's a great player, but is he as good of a player? Would he have all those wins, quote unquote, if he was playing, say, for the BC Lions, or if he was playing for the Saskatchewan Roughriders? Like, is it all him? Or, like, you're right, football is a team game, and to narrow it down to individuals, it is difficult, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. It's going to be some time, I think, before we'll know if Kevin Glenn is a starter or a Hall of Famer or not. So I guess I would put him in. I think 50,000 yards is tough to ignore. Ring or no ring.
It is tough to ignore. I think he should have won that, or Calgary should have won that Grey Cup and the 100th Grey Cup. I think they're a better team than Toronto, but, you know, we all know that anything can happen on a Sunday, a Grey Cup Sunday in one game. So listen, I'm still not sure if he's a Hall of Famer or not, because, like I said earlier, the Hall of Fame should be very stringent on who they allow in. And I'm not sure he's a Hall of Fame player. I'm just not sure. I'm not saying he's not, but it's still up in the air for me.
I think he's probably the player that I would say is the closest to being – is he or isn't he? Because you look at the number, like I said, 50,000 yards is hard to ignore. But then you look at it and go, was he, like you said, was he ever really the best player? And that's sort of where it falls. Like, in your opinion, was Matt, at any point in Matt Dunnigan's career, would you have said he was the best quarterback in football? I don't know. Let's go with Henry Burris, actually. That's a great example. And look, I'm not taking anything away from Burris. Burris is going to the Hall of Fame. I think that's undeniable. But at any point in his career, would you have considered him the best quarterback of the CFL? Because he played most of his career with Ricky Ray and Anthony Calvillo. And I think at any point in their careers, I don't think you would have said, I'll take Burris over, like, barring injury, of course. I think if they were doing those TSN top 50s, I don't think Henry Burris ever would have been the number one player. He would have been top five, for sure. Probably top three in quarterbacks, but would he have ever been the guy? I don't think he would have been. I think they would have always put Calvillo and Ray ahead of him.
Yeah, it'd have to be Calvillo, Ray, then Burris for me. I think he's a number three guy in his generation where he played. Now, there might be some other quarterbacks up there. You know, Dickinson played during his generation. I thought that Dickinson at one point was probably, if not the best, maybe number two quarterback. I was just a big fan of Dickinson. I thought he was incredibly accurate and a great passer. So yeah, it's a tough question to ask because, you know, we just look at, we're not on the field obviously, and you look at a guy like Nick Lewis who tweeted out that he should be a Hall of Fame player and like stop ignoring his greatness. And you know, maybe we should take some advice from a guy who actually played with him and against him.
You know what? I saw that tweet and I responded to it by saying, look, we all have our opinions. We all love to get in arguments about this stuff and talk about it back and forth. But this is a guy who played the game, who is still playing the game, plays it at a high level, is going to the Hall of Fame. Nick Lewis is going to the Hall of Fame. Maybe we should – our opinions don't really matter. We should really – like that. No. That's a lot of weight behind those words. So if Nick Lewis thinks he's a Hall of Famer, I guess he is. But again, he played with him. He's probably friends with him. Like there's – It's obviously not a complete picture just because one player or a handful of players say, no, this guy's great. But it tells you something when players who play the game are out there vouching for players that play on other teams.
Absolutely. But you say he's a Hall of Famer. I'm going to say he's not.
Okay. That's perfectly fair. This is just a coincidence, but we're going to move into the Bozo of the Week. And we're not calling you the Bozo for not saying Glenn's a Hall of Famer. We're not calling me a Bozo for saying he is. We've got I think this might be the first time ever, although I'll have to check the tapes, or so I'm sure maybe someone will correct me. But we have co-Bozos this week, Mike. Who are you naming as your co-Bozos of the Week for this week in the CFL?
I got Peters for his shove on the referee, and I mean, we have to touch on that because of all the – everyone was just up in arms about the Will Hill thing. You know, he should get six games and all this stuff. And while I agree that you can't grab the referee, I think that people were going a little – you know, they were jumping off the cliff a bit with the suspensions that they wanted him to get. But then you see the next week, Peters does a similar thing. He didn't grab him by the collar, but he gave him a shove, and that's worthy enough for a half Bozo of the Week this week. And my other one is Jerron Carter for being an idiot again. Again, I mean, the guy pregame crossed the line, the half field line, was like pretty much in the end zone of the Calgary Stampeders, and just caused a ruckus when there didn't need to be one. So those two guys get my Bozos of the Week this week.
I was really happy to see a lot of Eskimo fans, the vast majority of Eskimo fans, see the Peters play and go, well, he's getting suspended and he deserves it. Obviously, we're pretty tight with the guys who do the Eskimo Empire podcast. We've been on there a few times. Andrew and Superfan Mike, great, great dudes. Without a doubt, they were like, no, you cannot do that. And it wasn't a huge, like, it's not like he two-hand shoved him and threw him to the ground and started pounding him, but he touched the ref. And
yeah, there was a push. There was a push.
It was
there.
Definitely a push. It was definitely a push. And I even saw Eskimo fans go, I don't think he pushed him. And then they saw it again on a different angle. Oh, no, he definitely pushed him. I have seen, believe it or not, because there's one in every group, right? A few fans, very, very, very few, say that wasn't worthy of a suspension, but they're standing up for their guys. So there's not much you can do about that. But no, I think that's totally Bozo worthy. We gave it to Will Hill when he decided to be an idiot, and I think Gary Peters earned it as well. And I can't disagree with Daron Carter. And the thing with Carter is he can get away with these childish antics if he's playing well, but he's like the fourth leading receiver on the Riders. He has, I think, like under 200 yards receiving this year. Like, he hasn't been playing very well, and now he's getting into shoving matches and chirping matches and just being his general Daron Carter self, the player, the attitude that we saw get kicked out of Montreal not even a year ago. He's being that guy, and he has the talent to be the best receiver in this league. And I think talent wise, when we sat down in the offseason, we did our video game ratings, I'm pretty sure I had him as, if not number one, then number two, because talent wise, this guy is unbelievable. He should be playing in the NFL, and yeah, he had a shot in the NFL and it didn't work out. And it you got to think it's because he's kind of a bonehead. Now, I know people in Montreal said, you get to know him, he's a nice guy. And I'm sure that's true. I'm sure he's probably a good dude. But when he gets on the field and does these stupid things, like that's the image you're projecting to the world, and he's projecting the image of a complete tool. And when you're not performing and you're acting like this, definite definition of a bozo, Mike.
I mean, that's, yeah, you're not performing and you're acting like an idiot. I mean, that's what gets people cut, right? Now, I'm not saying he's going to get cut, but I wouldn't be shocked if he did, and you know, down the road, if he's still not producing, then why are you here, you know? And I haven't been too hard on Carter throughout the years, but I just look at the guy play and I look at his body language on the field. It's just not good. Like you said, he's got all the talent in the world. I know that I put him on our video game rankings. I put him the highest receiver in the league. He was a 98 or a 97. I can't remember, but he has all the talent. He's not producing on the field, and he has a bad attitude. So something's going to have to change with him, I'd say.
He's his own worst enemy in a lot of ways. And I he reminds me, not in skill-wise or anything like that, but in kind of attitude-wise, of a player that I'm sure you're going to remember, Robert Baker for the Toronto Argonauts. Yeah. Everyone kind of remembers him. He was the touchdown maker. But his lasting image was when he punched Noel Prefontaine on the sidelines. That's what everyone's going to remember him for. And his stupidity kind of killed his career in a lot of ways. I think he would have had a much longer career if he wasn't a bonehead. And you kind of look at Carter and say, dude, yeah, he's not going to make millions of dollars playing in the CFL, but he could have a really long, really productive career up here, go down as one of the greatest ever, because the talent is there. I cannot stress that enough. He is head and shoulders as talented, if not more so, than any other player in this league. But his attitude is what's going to stop him. And as good as he is, he goes on teams 3, 4, and 5, and his career is gonna flame out, and we're gonna look back and go, man, what could have been.
Do you think he gets another NFL shot?
No, I don't think he does. I think that's passed. I think he used, obviously, again, I don't want to be Rod Black here. Everyone's gonna crucify me, but he is the son of a Hall of Fame NFL player, and he got his one shot, and when he was cut from Montreal this year, there was no talk whatsoever about him going south. It was about who's going to sign him in the CFL. I really don't see where an NFL team's going to take a chance on it, because not only now is the attitude still there, but the production is dipped. So yeah, they look up here, they scout him, and they go, well, not only is he not dominating like he should with the talent he has, now he's still acting like a complete moron. So like, I don't see it. I think his career is going to end in the CFL, and sadly, it might end a lot sooner than it should.
Yeah, the guy needs to step it up, or yeah, he's not going to be playing any football whatsoever unless he wants to play in the Arena League or the Indoor Football League. But yeah, it's a wasted talent so far in his career.
Yeah, so two guys this week definitely deserving of the Bozo Awards, and who knows, maybe I remember you said at the beginning of the season we're not going to force it, and this year we haven't had to. We really haven't had to force it. No. Maybe one week we won't have one, but so far someone's decided to step up and be a complete idiot every week, so who knows what we're going to find come next week. But hopefully it's no one, honestly. Like, I don't like Hayne. I, like, it's a fun little thing to talk about, but my hope is that we never have to hand these out, because everyone's all nice and pleasant on the field.
Yeah, that would be nice. I like the segment, but you know, like calling people out every week. It's just something that we have to do.
Okay, something else we have to do is preview the upcoming Ticats game, and this one is this one's going to be a tough one. So the Ticats, they need a win, and it's not going to be easy to get one this week because the team travels to Calgary for a game against the Stamps on Saturday, in a game between one of the best teams in the league versus the worst. And before we get into this week's game in particular, I want to give a little history here, and this should tell you how monumental a task it is for the Ticats to actually beat the Stampeders. Hamilton has not won a game against Calgary anywhere since September 25th of 2011. Now, if that date rings a bell, Mike, that was a game, as many people remember, that was not held in Hamilton. It was not held in Calgary, but it was held in Moncton, New Brunswick. It was the second TD Atlantic game. I was in attendance. You were too, were you not?
Yeah, I was there. I was there.
So we both witnessed in the stands live the last time the Hamilton Tiger Cats defeated the Calgary Stampeders. If that wasn't bad enough, 2011, Mike, that was almost 6 years ago. Hamilton has not won in Calgary since 2004. That is 13 years ago. Mike, what were you doing in 2004?
2004, I would have been, let's see here, would have been 19, so I was probably getting into a lot of trouble. paying attention to the Ticats still, but being a little head. Man, that's a long time ago. 13 years and having beat a team in their own barn. I mean, it has to break, doesn't it? This game, don't you think?
Oh, that is, oh. You know what? I've seen better Ticats teams than this one go in there and not get the W. And there's been a lot of heartbreak there. There was a 15-14 loss. I believe it was in 2009. We all remember, I think it was 2012, the snow game where the field goal was botched. The snap was low and Fantuz couldn't pin it down. They lost that one by, I think it was 34-32. It was a really tight game there too. Just 2000, like, for context for me, the reason I asked you what you were doing in 2004 is because I hadn't even started university yet. Now, I went to university a little bit later. I was, in 2004, I was 22, but I had not started university yet, and now I'm 6 years. When I went to Moncton for the game against the Stamps, between Ticats and Stamps, that was a present for me for graduating. So I've been out of university. The Ticats have not won against the Stampeders since I've left school, so I think this means I have to go back to school, right?
I think so. And I have to go back to being a little.
Well, I think you can maintain that pretty well.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, like 2004 is a long, long time ago. So basically what we're getting at here is this is not going to be an easy game for the Ticats to win. So Mike, you want to handle some offensive talk here. What can they do? Is there anything they can do offensively that can win this game? Or are you hoping, kind of like I'm hoping, because I'm giving myself away here a little bit when we do our picks, I'm kind of just hoping that we see more progression from this team and looking good. And I know moral victories mean absolutely nothing in pro sports, but for me, it'd be nice to just kind of see them continue to progress and look good in games, because I don't think they can win this one.
I think they, you know, we watched the game last week, Calgary against Saskatchewan, and that D-line just ate up the Saskatchewan Roughriders. They were just causing havoc for Glenn all game long. They sacked him like a million times, so I was looking at that going, oh God, you know, we have to play this defensive line next week. Listen, Calgary is a very good team, but it's not like they've been blowing teams out of the water. Now, the Ticats just have to put up points. Score touchdowns, put up points, do not let them hang around, because if they're within six in the fourth quarter, Calgary's probably going to win this game, but they have to jump out early and get a lot of points on the board if they're going to win this game. That's pretty much it.
I'm glad you bring up the Stamps have been good but not great, because I feel that way too, and I think that game against Saskatchewan was kind of sort of encapsulates their entire season, where they get out to this big 17-0 lead, which honestly probably should have been closer to 31-0 with the way that they played in the first half. And then they kind of crapped the bed a little bit in the third quarter. They were not good at all against Saskatchewan third quarter. Allowed the Riders to make it close, get it to within a touchdown, and then the fourth quarter starts and the Stamps roll. And they win the game. I think they won by 17. I think the final was 27-10. But this doesn't feel like the dominant Stamps team that we've seen the last few years. They're still very, very good. And they're still excellent at home. They haven't lost more than two games at home since, I think, 2012. So it may even extend past that. I think the stats they showed on TSN were 2013, and for some reason they showed Bo Levi Mitchell's picture on there, even though in 2013 Kevin Glenn was the starter for most of the season. But again, that I digress. It's tough to win in Calgary for anyone. Last year they were undefeated. It's really hard. But the Stamps do make mistakes, and we saw it against Montreal. They made some killer mistakes that cost them that game. We saw them get into lulls against the Riders last week. There is stuff there for this team to do. Defensively speaking, honestly, I don't know. There's a lot of talent on that Stamps offense. Hamilton hasn't really shown an ability to stop the run, although teams haven't really run all that much on them. So Jerome Messam could have a big game. He had a massive game against the Riders this week. Thank you for my fantasy team. But maybe because it's the Stamps, it's in Calgary, and it's been over a half dozen years since this team has even beat Calgary, and we're going on over a dozen years since they actually won in Calgary. I know history doesn't mean much in the 2005 team compared to it, not the same at all, but man, that is tough history to look at. I just don't see how they can win this game. Yeah, they got to put up points. They got to stop Calgary from scoring points, and both those things are easier said than done, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, Bo Levi Mitchell isn't this mythical quarterback, like the greatest of all time. Like some people say he is, you know, he's a good quarterback. Don't get me wrong, but I think that if the game is, you know, if we're winning by quite a bit in the fourth quarter, we'll be all right. Now that's, you know, easier said than done, like you said before, but take away Messam and make Bo Levi Mitchell win the game through the air. Now, that might be weird saying that because our secondary has been pretty bad this year, but if you take that option away, I think we might have a shot at this game.
I saw Mitchell look really frustrated against the Riders this past week, and more frustrated than I think I've seen him in any game, and that's including the terrible Grey Cup performance he had last year. So maybe the chink's coming off the armor a little bit for the Stampeders. I'm tipping my hand here. I'm still not going to pick the Ticats to win this game, but we've seen some massive upsets in the CFL year after year where we go, how did that happen? And who knows? Maybe the Cats go in there and they shock the world. But I'm not holding my breath for it, but I would not be upset if it happened.
I'd be quite overjoyed if it happened.
I imagine the narrative, even at 1-4, if they were to go into Calgary and win this game, imagine how that would totally change the narrative around this team. Because yes, they'd still be 1-4, they'd still be last place in the East, but it'd be like, they went into Calgary and won. Maybe we have underestimated this team. Maybe they did just need a couple of weeks to get their crap together to turn it on, and who knows? It could happen. Will it happen? I don't think so, but hey, last year I wouldn't have thought Ottawa would win the Grey Cup, and look what happened. So who knows? Ready to do some picks now, Mike?
I am as ready as I will ever be.
All right, we got four games on the slate this week. Starting Thursday, the Montreal Alouettes travel to Winnipeg to take on the Blue Bombers. Who you got in this one, buddy?
I take the Bombers at home. You know, Montreal is kind of a question mark. We still don't know what they really are. And the same thing could be said about the Bombers, I suppose, but I'm just going to take them because they're at home.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm leaning as well. I think Winnipeg looked really good against BC, but lacked that something. We got the terrible Matt Nichols pick that pretty much sealed that game for the Lions. But I think they're better than Montreal, and I think they'll maybe not easily win at home, but they'll win at home. Next up, Friday night, this is probably the game of the week for everyone. The 4-1 BC Lions at the 4-0 Edmonton Eskimos. Mike, who you like in this one?
Excited for this one. I plan on going. And it's the game of the week for sure, and it's a tough one to pick. Lule, Lions, Riley, I'm going to go with the Eskimos. They're at home, obviously. You know, they haven't been – they have four wins, but I don't think they've reached their full potential yet as a team. It's going to be a close one. The Eskimos just barely edge out the Lions.
I'm going to go the other way here. I think the Eskimos, even as an undefeated team, they're a flawed team. They're finding ways to win, which, full credit to them, kudos to them. BC, with Lule last week, he said back-to-back 400-yard games. That's incredible for a guy who hasn't started in, 2 years almost?
Do you think that Sorry, do you think that it's going to be Lule's team, even if Jennings comes back? Like, do you think he'll be the starter going forward if he keeps performing the way he is?
It doesn't this feel a lot to you like the Dave Dickinson, Casey Printer situation,
It
where
does.
Dave Dickinson got hurt, Printers came in, won MOP, set the world on fire, and then the following year, Dickinson was the starter. It's a little different because the young guy's the one that's hurt and the veteran's the one coming in, but I don't know. I think Jennings gets this back. If Lule keeps rolling and the Lions keep winning, I don't think there's any. It's Wally, man. He'll do what he thinks is best for the team. Jennings, I think, is still the future there. But if they're going, I don't know. I don't see a QB controversy sparking. I think Lule knows his role, essentially. He was a free agent. He decided to re-sign with the Lions, and he knows he's the backup. I think he looks at it, even though he's had so much success, Grey Cup MVP, Grey Cup champion, league MOP. I think he knows he's Jeremiah Mazzoli at this point. He's the backup, and he'll hand the reins back to the starter. But I wouldn't be surprised if there was a bit of a QB shakeup with Lule, especially if the team keeps winning. I think once he has a poor performance or the team loses, I think then this goes away. But he's just looked so good these last 2 weeks
I mean,
that like he's put up 40 plus points in both of his starts. And he didn't start against Hamilton, obviously, but he came after one play, so it was essentially a start. But he's put 40 points on the board on offense in both of his appearances this year. That's pretty impressive, and that's kind of why I'm still leaning to them. Edmonton's defense is pretty good. I think this is going to be a great football game. I guess gives a slight edge to BC because, and this is going to sound stupid, I had all home teams winning this week, and that rarely ever happens. So I figured a road team would win, and the best road team to me is BC, and that's kind of why I went with them.
Yeah, you're kind of making me question my pick there. I mean, the BC Lions, we look at in the offseason, all that talent in the receiving core and the running back and all that, and then it just seemed like it wasn't clicking with Jennings in there, and Lule comes in and he's on fire. So I respect that pick, but I'll stick with the Eskimos.
I can't blame you for that. I won't be shocked if the Eskimos win this game at all. So that this to me is two good teams. They're going to go in there, they're going to battle, and it's going to be so much fun for everyone to watch. Speaking of, how great have the games been this year? There's really been very few duds. We have been fortunate to watch some really darn good football, don't you think?
Absolutely. The recent past of CFL, the last couple of years, it's been tough. I mean, to be honest with you, my argument was always, CFL, NFL. It's, yes, the NFL is big time and they have the best players, but we got the better game, damn it. And that wasn't true the last couple of years. Now I think it's back. I think the changes, the illegal contact stuff, has really opened up the game, and we're seeing some absolutely tremendous football, tremendously entertaining football this season, and it's been spectacular.
All right, so those two divergences out of the way. Let's get back to some picks. But I'm glad you agreed because I thought, especially that Winnipeg BC game, that was just absolutely a treat to watch. If you
And the
stay,
Ottawa Calgary game
oh, even
is
Hamilton, Edmonton this week. There was a little sloppy and slow at the beginning, but turned into a really. We've been what it is. It's exciting football. We're watching these games, and it gets down to like the last 3 minutes, and it's still pretty much anyone's ball game. There's been very few blowouts. I think, really, in my mind, the only dud game that I can recall was the Hamilton-Toronto one in week one. I think everything else has been pretty darn good, and it's been fun to watch.
Yep, absolutely. The football's been tremendous this year.
Hopefully, it keeps up because it's been a good year. I think we're seeing offenses click, defense play. It's just been fun. That's all we got to go. Let's get back to the picks. Saturday, first game of the doubleheader, Toronto Argonauts at the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Mike, who do you got in this one?
That's another tough one. I'm gonna pick the Argos. I think the Argos have a pretty good defense, and they might do a pretty good job against the Rough Riders, even though they're at home. I'm picking probably the underdogs going into this. Nah, maybe not, but I'll go with the Argos.
I'm going to take the Riders, and this is why. The Argos play tonight. We record this. The kickoff is in about an hour. The reason we're even recording this early so that we can both watch the game. But the Argos are playing on Monday night. The Riders played Saturday night. A little bit extra time. The Argos got to travel. The Riders are at home. I'm going to lean towards the home team here. I think the Argos might be the better team. And I think if this was reversed and it was the Riders heading to Toronto, I think I'd give the Argos the benefit here, but I think with the game in Saskatchewan, a little bit of a short week for Toronto, I like the Riders in this one. Last game of the week, our boys from Hamilton, the Ticats, head to Calgary to take on the Stampeders Saturday night, second half of the doubleheader. I've already made my pick, so I'll say it again. I'm taking Calgary in this one. Stamps are at home. I'm not picking against them, probably ever, or until at least they lose one at home. So I got Calgary. Mike, who do you have?
I got Hamilton. I'm calling. Last week I had, a pretty bozo-ish pick, taking the Riders over Calgary. That didn't turn out good for me, but I'm taking the Ticats because it's desperation time, damn it. They have to put some wins together, and they're going to do it.
Okay. Okay. Well, I like your confidence. What a difference a couple of weeks make, eh? I think we sat here and we're like, man, this team's never going to win, and now you're sitting here picking them to win in Calgary. It's a bit of a homer pick. I'm sure you're going to take some chirps for that, but hey, you believe it. You're going to take it. I give you a lot of credit there. If you're right, you're going to look like a freaking genius.
I hope I am, man. I just.
I hope you are too. Like, I may have picked Calgary, but I hope you are right. I want the Ticats to win. I just don't think they will.
Because if they beat Calgary, they got some confidence. They go into Edmonton. I think Edmonton is a beatable team for the Ticats. I'm just trying to be an optimist for these next 2 weeks.
All right. So we got one question this week now that the picks are over. It's a pretty good one. We got a few questions, a lot of them talking about Caleros, but I feel like we talked about him a fair bit during the game segment. So this is the one real question that we got, and it comes from Hammy. Used to send us a lot of questions, hasn't recently, but he's getting back into it. That's good. So he gave us one. He says, in your opinion, is the lack of steady offense due to the system, Zach Caleros, or the offensive line? Mike, what do you think?
I'd say it's a combination of all three. Caleros hasn't been at his best this year. He hasn't been the Caleros that we've known, the elite player that we know he is capable of being. The offensive line has not been great. It is improving. And, I'm not an expert on the schemes or anything, but from what I've heard from, experts out there say it's Austin's system is a complicated one. So I think it's a combination of all three. And but I think it's improving, and I think it will be a really good offense going forward in these next couple weeks.
I completely agree with you. I think it's, and I think anyone who would get this question would say it is a product of all three. It's not one or the other. I think the O-line, like you said, has been improving, but they are still not there as a unit that can protect those quarterbacks. You're still seeing Caleros rushed a few times. You saw it a lot less against Edmonton, which was very, very good to see. Warmed the cockles of my heart to see him not pressured as much as we saw the previous few games. We mentioned it earlier. I think Caleros was forcing things a bit much. I feel like he's taking the team on his back and trying to make plays where sometimes discretion is the better part of valor. And I think he's trying to make these big plays, and sometimes it works out. We saw the Jalen Saunders catch a couple weeks ago where if he would have taken off, he would have picked up 15 yards in a run. But instead he stops, guns 160 yards down the field for a big first down. So that's the type of player he is. But if he didn't feel like he has to do so much, I think that would make it better for the offense. And I do think the system is a bit of an issue. And I think the big thing is, and this is, banging your head against a brick wall, but it's a lack of a running game. Now we're seeing a little bit more with Ross Scheuermann getting 10 carries. That's a lot for a running back in the Ticats offense. But it's still, to me, when the threat of a run is not there, it kind of limits what the offense can do. It basically takes out any play action passes the team can do. Takes away any sort of like trick plays in the run, like sweeps, jet sweeps, end around, stuff like that. So it obviously is a combination of all three. And I think anyone out there who would look at this would probably say the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just pinpoint it on, it's all Claros's fault, or it's all the left tackle's fault, or the right tackle, whatever. It's been a problem. All three have been a problem this year, and we're just hoping that they have gotten past that and they can start clicking. All three of those things can start clicking and they can start putting up points and yards, and it can be all sunshine and roses going forward.
And getting those W's, hopefully starting this week in Calgary. So thank you, Andrew, for that wonderful question. And that's it. That's the show for this week. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and we're also, again, on Google Play and Stitcher, and of course, you can listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. You want to throw us a question, Andrew threw us one on Twitter, so feel free to hit us up there. Mike, let them know your Twitter handle as always, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at JoshSmith_82. And you can throw some questions in the comment section of 3Down Nation. Feel free to do it there. Or if you'd like, you can fire us off an email. We have one of those, podsky@gmail.com. So lots of ways to contact us, lots of ways to get in on the show. So please feel free to hit us up in any manner you see fit. So that was episode 81 of Podsky Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.